It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in just a few minutes, I'll talk with Davenport Superintendent Art Tate about new school security measures in our public schools. But now to follow up on a conversation I had last week with Representative Mary Masher of Iowa City, a Democrat. Masher said last week that changes in 2017 to Iowa's collective bargaining law have been harmful to teachers. She said that teachers would be on strike right now if there weren't harsh penalties for striking in Iowa. She also mentioned that there are billboards in Minnesota trying to get teachers in northern Iowa to come work in Minnesota, a state with fewer restrictions when it comes to collective bargaining and labor strikes. Well, we wanted to make sure you heard the Republican view on the changes to Iowa's collective bargaining law. State Senator Jason Schultz is one of the architects of the sweeping public sector collective bargaining changes in 2017. We'll have him respond to Representative Masher's concerns in a moment. Let's go back to that part of my conversation from last week with Representative Masher. In the 1970s, Iowa teachers gave up their right to strike with the trade-off of being able to negotiate their contracts as collective groups within their unions with the state. Last year, in 2017, the Iowa legislature passed a law that dramatically scaled back the four-decades-old collective bargaining law that governs union contract negotiations for the state's public workers. Now, when talking about the collective bargaining change with Representative Masher last week, she said she was confused by the reasoning for the change. She said that nobody was asking for limits to collective bargaining.
What's puzzling is nobody was asking for that to be repealed. There was not a big outcry or a public demand for that. And a lot of us were puzzled by why that was even on the agenda and why we were taking on an issue like that that had been working well. Very few bargaining units went to arbitration, and arbitration's kind of that last step before you say, you know, you kind of pull that trigger and say, we can't compromise. We can't find an agreement. Most of the bargaining units found compromise, and they were able to do that without going to that final step of arbitration, which tells me the system was working.
But most, if not all, of your Republican colleagues in the House were for this change. So you can't be puzzled about what was driving them. What was driving this change?
I think that they saw that they felt teachers were making too much. I think they felt that the collective bargaining law wasn't working for them.
Okay, State Senator Jason Schultz, one of the architects of the sweeping changes in collective bargaining, joining me now. I take it you have a different view on why these changes were made. Tell us.
I certainly do, and we were hearing from public employers, and that would include city councils, county supervisors, superintendents, and school boards, about how often their hands were tied, how their budgets were somewhat out of their control due to the changes that were made in the 70s, which may have worked well then, but that was 40 years ago, and things have changed since then. Budgets have gotten tighter. All the numbers have compounded any time that you have increases on increases, the percent of compound increases have driven a lot of political entities against the wall. I had to smile when I heard that interview, that it's almost as if there's an accusation that when she says it wasn't working for us, I guess I would remind everybody this only applies to public employers who are not exactly typically large Republican donors. They're not people that we're normally visiting with for contributions or anything. There was nothing here that we had to gain other than to try to put the elected officials back into charge of their budgets and back in charge of their political entities. They had told us that they'd lost control and we needed to make changes.
Mm-hmm. So in the few minutes we have here, tell us what I understand a drive behind this was savings. Have there been savings already realized?
Well, I believe any time that you put the employees back in charge of helping to fund their own health care, health insurance, but when you have all of the fringe benefits that are back into negotiations or out of negotiations. Certainly you do. There was a number that was reported last year in the Des Moines paper that the state was looking to see about a $40, $45 million savings. And that would be just simply realigning contracts closer to what the private sector is already experiencing and has been experiencing for these last 40 years. Mm-hmm. Nobody was placed in a situation where they were at a disadvantage. We were simply leveling the playing field between public and private employers and giving the decision-making powers back to those who the taxpayers have elected.
What about this claim by Representative Masher? And she had just met with 40 or 50 Iowa teachers that teachers are so frustrated here in Iowa, they would strike if there weren't such harsh penalties. Are you worried about teacher morale here in Iowa?
Well, I believe the statistics are out that Iowa is somewhere around number 8 in the country in teacher pay. No, I don't believe. I believe we have a certainly any population is going to have an activist element who are more ideologically driven than driven by their daily experience. And unfortunately, there's elements within that population that are trying to gin up anger and opposition among the general population of educators in Iowa. That's unfortunate because I believe we have a pretty good place to work as a teacher. We have great people in Iowa to educate our children, and I disagree with that experience completely.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to those listening who do feel that you and other Republicans are harming Iowa's long tradition of excellent public school education, eroding it?
Oh, I would disagree. The changes that were made, it should be pointed out that through the old Chapter 20, the collective bargaining, the union leaders were fighting to protect the least of our teachers, those who we wish we could move out of the classroom and maybe they'd have a better opportunity in other fields, and then at the same time reward the best teachers, creating a better environment, allowing for more collaboration, and allowing schools to attract the best and the brightest for the taxpayers' children.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that we're making it worse simply doesn't reflect what we passed, and it's not what I'm hearing from school boards and administrators.
So are these savings that you mentioned before in part due to some teachers leaving the education field here in Iowa?
Oh, I don't think so, because the teacher needs to be replaced. What it does is give the employer the opportunity to better choose the replacements. I don't expect any savings from that. What I expect is a better return on the money the taxpayers are investing.
Mm-hmm. Were, in your feeling and other Republicans' minds, the feeling that teachers in the state were making too much money, as Representative Masher claimed?
No. In fact, that's absolutely wrong, because what we did was actually allow schools to pay individual teachers more. What we did was allow them to pay on a merit base, that if you are one of the greatest teachers in the school, you should receive the bonuses. If there is an opening in a school district that is difficult to fill, we allowed schools to offer sign-on bonuses and additional salary outside the regular pay structure. What the opponents of this bill are angry at is that the old system required you to give every teacher a raise if you needed to pay for, say, a special ed teacher to come in and had to attract them through salary. We unbridled the administration of these schools, and this would apply to other public employers, and allowed them to go ahead and offer bonuses and higher salaries. So cutting the pay was never the goal. It was only to make sure it went to the best.
Okay, State Senator Jason Schultz, Republican, we appreciate getting your view as one of the architects of the sweeping public sector collective bargaining changes put into place in 2017. Senator Schultz, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for asking. I appreciate you reaching out.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, remember the regular fire and tornado drills in school when you were a kid? Nowadays, students also practice lockdown drills and what to do in case of an armed intruder. So let's take a moment to discuss some of the newer security measures being put in place in schools all over Iowa, all over the country for that matter. Superintendent Art Tate is with us of the Davenport School District. Hello, Art Tate.
Hi. Glad to be with you, Ben.
Glad to be with you. Sorry we have to talk about security in schools these days, but of course it's a necessity. After a student at the Parkland, Florida High School shot and killed 17 students and staff back in February, Art Tate, you took action. What did you do?
Well, first of all, I assessed the situation. It wasn't just that one incident. It was that when I started looking at just the whole school year, I started seeing some statistics about school year 17-18 being the deadliest school year in history for shootings. And then even after the February incident, there were 21 weeks in 2018 where there were 23 shootings. And to me, you know, this has been with us forever. It's been with us since Columbine and Sandy Hook sort of put an emphasis on it. But this is different. And I took action to try to get spending authority so I could bolster up our security.
Mm-hmm. How much did you ask for? How much did you get?
Well, I had to go to the School Budget Review Committee, and I asked for $1.1 million in modified supplemental amount for 1 year period, and that's what they granted me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what new measures and security did you put in place with those monies?
Well, what I am going to do, and we're in the process, is first of all to hire two more resource officers, or at least the equivalent. They could be part-time, to make sure that every one of our intermediate and high schools, we have 29 schools, so each intermediate and high school has a resource officer full-time. Plus, we are hiring 18 additional district security specialists. These are campus people who are on our campuses, and right now we have them in intermediate and high schools, but now I will also have one in every elementary school. Plus, I'm hiring somebody at the district level who will be my security person.
Mm-hmm. So 29 schools in your district, resource officers, armed resource officers, each one of them?
Yes, they are. They're policemen, and so they have the normal uniform that a policeman has, and that includes firearms.
Mm-hmm. Any arms on teachers?
No, absolutely not. And our other security people, they're guards at each of our schools. They will not be armed.
And teachers may not have arms on them, even if they wanted to.
True. There are no arms allowed in our schools unless they are with people who are allowed to carry them as law enforcement officers.
Mm-hmm. Physical changes in your buildings, remodeling, doors, locks, fences, any of that?
Oh, yeah. We've been at that for a long time. I've been here 7 years, and they'd already started a process of putting video cameras in the schools as well as secure entrances. And after Sandy Hook, we really got to work on that to get it done quicker. And then after the incident in Parkland, we decided to put more money into hardening the entrances, our secure entrances, so we finished that before school started this year.
Mm-hmm. How do you harden a school, harden entrances, make it harder for someone to get in without at the same time making it harder for people to escape if an intruder does get in?
Well, you can always get, you know, you got crash doors, so anybody can get out of a school. But to get in, for example, in any school, it takes three different doors. You have to be buzzed through or be allowed to go through, and that's the front entrance of the door, and then going into the office, and then leaving the office. So from that standpoint, people would have to be allowed to come in. They can't just go pushing the door open or opening the door to get to our schools.
Mm-hmm. How confident are you, Superintendent, that you can really protect, once these are all in place, that you can really protect against a determined intruder intent on doing harm?
Nothing is 100%, and I keep saying every school district, every school is vulnerable. These measures will just stop somebody who doesn't have a plan or that doesn't want to shoot out, you know, the entire door or front of a building. So you can't stop anyone who's completely determined. What we're trying to do is harden so it makes it more difficult. But the other part of this equation is not just stopping people, it's stopping the incident from happening. And what we're doing is outreaching to students and parents, and we're doing everything within our schools to look for threats and to look for students who need additional help, because my premise is we've got to stop it before it ever gets to our schools.
Mm-hmm. So what are the red flags that you're training your people to look for?
Well, we are actually going to be passing out to students red flags to look for when they see other students. signs of stress, changes in the habits of the student, access to weapons and things of that nature, because my students have actually asked me to give them something so they'll know what to look for.
Mm. How much do you know about how other schools, other school districts in Iowa have done similar things to what you're doing?
Well, very little. There really isn't a network. We probably should have one. I think the state is a little slow in reacting. The shootings happened just as the legislature was beginning to wind down, and there wasn't much they could do. I tried to get action right away, but again, with the wind down of the legislature, I couldn't get anything. We need a network. We need to know what other districts are doing. I mean, in our area alone, now the school has just started 1 week, United Township, Moline, and North Scott have all had threats.
Mm. How much security is required by the state?
The state doesn't require any amount of security. They are now requiring that you have a security plan. So we all have 1 year to get that ready. But I can't think of anything that the state has stipulated where you must do this.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the legislature should take some action this coming session?
Yes, they need to take action. A lot of states have taken action. I follow that pretty closely. And a lot of states are considering school resource officers. They're considering having sources of funding to help schools with their security. So something's got to be done. We've got to keep this alive because it's too easy to forget it. And we're all too busy, and there's too many things to do in education. But to me, my number one job is the security of my students, and I've got to think of that first.
Mm-hmm. You seem very proactive in this area. Do you think the Davenport School District, of which you're the superintendent, is one of the most ready? And as you said, we can never have 100% guarantees, one of the most ready for the worst should it occur?
Well, I couldn't tell you. I'm not sure what other school districts do. I know we also have something called that we're monitoring a social media with. And because we know that social media is one of the greatest threats to student safety that we have, we also are putting into place an emergency communication network. So I just couldn't tell you what other districts are doing. I just know that we're doing everything we possibly can to be state of the art.
Mm. A resource officer in each one of your 29 schools there in Davenport, a police officer armed. We know that in that high school shooting in Florida, there was an armed sheriff's deputy working as a school resource officer during the whole shooting, a surveillance video showing later that deputy waited outside the school as the shooter rampaged through the school with that AR-15. That officer was initially suspended and then resigned. Are you concerned that hiring security professionals, even if they're armed with pistols, may not be enough against someone armed with assault weapons like an AR-15?
Well, I want to make it clear that we have school resource officers. I'm looking for it only in intermediate and high school. The other school, every school has a security supervisor. It's like a security guard, and they're unarmed.
Unarmed.
But Yes, they're unarmed. But let's talk about a school resource officer. Again, he wears a sidearm because he or she is a policeman. And no, one person with a pistol is not going to be able to confront necessarily and take down someone that has an automatic weapon. They might if they're in the right place and the right time. I want them not for preventative measures as much as, or not for measures to react. I want them to be preventative. Mm. I want them to relate to the students. I want them to help us to ferret out the threats. And they do. They know the students. They watch for social media. They're very good about being proactive to warn us about things that happen. And quite frankly, I think any school district will let you know there are threats every week. Some student is going to write something, say something, draw something, put something on social media where you say, wow, that scares me, and we have to react to that. School resource officers are really upfront helping us do that.
What about so-called ALICE training? We've talked about that in the past on this program. Alert, lockdown, inform, counter, evacuate, encouraging teachers, students to take more proactive approach to an intruder rather than a lockdown-only approach. Is that still a training method, for instance, in your school district?
Oh, yes. We have been using ALICE for several years. We in every school, our requirement now is you do it every quarter. It's going to look different in schools. In elementary schools, we will generally just talk about to our students, gee, if we had a problem, here's what we would do. Intermediate school, we get a little bit more active on what we might do, and maybe we may do an evacuation so they see how to do it. And at high school, we actually run drills with the high schoolers because they as high schoolers, can really combat an active shooter.
Mm. Superintendent Tate, this is not the school that you or I or many of our listeners went to. I wonder, in closing, how do you think all this extra security, this stress, these threats impact the learning environment?
Oh, there's got to be an impact on our students. We try to minimize that. And what I want people to know is all the things we're doing now are preventative and that we will take care of the students. And I want people to feel secure. I've already talked to parents. I've talked to faculty who thank me for having put in the secure entrances. Again, it's not fail-safe against a determined shooter, but it really keeps out people who might cause trouble, and I think it makes parents feel better. So they need to know we care, we're proactive. I think about it every day, and we're going to do whatever it takes to keep our students safe.
Superintendent Art Tate of the Davenport School District. Thank you very much, Superintendent.
Thank you, Ben. Bye.
Bye now. And that does it for today. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Caitlin Harrop. Also help today from Shirley Wong and John Pemble. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. Politics Day, of course, tomorrow. I'm Ben Kiefer. I hope you'll join us. Until then.